My name is Stephen Ferguson, and you're listening to the People's Republic of St Neots, a podcast about people rather than politics, which celebrates the ordinary people that make St Neots a wonderful place to live, work and play. I've lived in St Neots for a decade now, which is almost 20% of my entire life. But according to many long-time residents, you don't count as proper St Neots unless you were born here. My guest today easily meets that qualification. Not only was she born in St Neots, she went to school here, and apart from a brief departure for university, she intends to live in St Neots for the rest of her adult life. More than that, Grace Chapman's ancestors have lived in St Neots for more than 400 years, which in my book makes her proper St Neots and perhaps the most St Neots person I've ever met. I hope you enjoy listening to episode 3 of the People's Republic of St Neots podcast. So good morning. So I'm sat in the kitchen of Grace Chapman, who is a serial volunteer, former broadcast professional, I've just heard, from Long Sands College Radio, Community Radio?
Yeah, LC Sounds. I don't know if it's a thing anymore. It was a very brief flash in the pan.
Were you presenting or were you producing?
We did a bit of everything, really. I was mainly talked. That's sort of my area of expertise. I just talked. Went and did some journalism things and talked.
So being that's why we had you on today, because you are an incessant talker. I spent most of yesterday walking around St Neots with you, which we'll talk about in a minute. But Grace, I'd describe you as certainly one of the most positive and enthusiastic voices for St Neots, a serial community volunteer. And in my experience, those kinds of people are always newcomers to the town. So when did you rock up in St Neots?
My family have been here. The earliest we've been able to date it is 1662. I'd love to say we've been here since the Civil War, and we may have been, but we don't have the evidence as of yet. So a rough, 300-400 years, just casually.
1662. So when I frame myself as a champion for St Neots, people go, you've only lived here for 10 years, you're not a champion. Is the 1662 qualify you as a proper St Neots person?
Maybe. Think? There might be some people that disagree, but I would say that, we've been here a while.
I think the thing I know you best for is your passion for local history and your involvement with the St Neots History Society. So today is Bank Holiday Monday. Sixth of May. Yesterday was Rogation Sunday. So explain to the listeners what Rogation Sunday is and what we were doing yesterday.
So Rogation Sunday, it's biblical, that side of things I'm less good with. But the important thing is that it is the fifth Sunday after Easter, and it is the day that traditionally up and down the country you go on a beating the bounds walk, which is what we did.
And so yesterday we're both sitting here with mild sunburn because it was the first sunny day of the year almost, wasn't it? And
we
had a, I think, 11.3 miles, according to my Garmin, walk around the outside of St Neots and basically, not physically marking, but memorising the boundaries of the parish, which was the original purpose of that walk.
Yeah, so back then you'd have sort of esteemed members of the community. Obviously, that's who we had yesterday.
We couldn't find anyone yesterday.
So you'd normally have your local vicar or priest, and as well as other sort of important people in the community. And you might have sort of a group of young boys as well to sort of pass the information on. And you'd go around with a willow wand, and you'd physically, the beating bit comes from that you would physically beat the boundary, like the fence boundaries, as you went along. I think I've heard some idea that potentially you might occasionally beat the boys you were with the wand in order to help them remember the boundary.
That didn't happen yesterday, in case social services are listening.
It was a beating free, so we mainly did the bounds. And it was really important because back then, the parish that you lived in and knowing the boundary of that, most people couldn't read, most people didn't have access to maps. So knowing where the parish boundary was really important. It could, which parish benefits you were entitled to, where you paid your tithings, where you could get married, where you'd get buried, where your children would be christened. And it was also for sorting out parish sort of boundary disputes. And we found out yesterday that occasionally because everyone's doing it on the same day, if one group bumped into another, they might have a bit of a scrap at the boundary line.
So I was up for that yesterday, actually. I was all tooled up for in case any ruffians from Ainsbury or Abbotsley came across and tried to encroach on St Neots Parish. But we didn't see anybody, did we? And the wonderful thing about the walk is that it took us, 4 or 5 hours.
And we saw nobody else. I don't think we passed anybody else. And it kind of reminds you that when you think of St. Neots these days, you think of this kind of suburban, urban town. But actually walking around the parish boundaries, which is, you know, was it 11 and a half miles, is a long way. Mm-hmm. It reminds you of that we're really a rural village, or it used to be a rural village.
So much of the town's history is shaped by agriculture and its sort of, it's rural nature. It's a very fast growth we've had in the last 100 years, starting with the London overspill. But before that, if I look at my family history, and my ancestors were not well-to-do people, really. Most of them were agricultural labourers, or doing, you know, working with horses or working in industries linked to farming and agriculture. And that's as most people were back then.
Yeah, and I think that, so understanding that history, I think St. Neots is changing. Maybe it's not changing more rapidly than it ever did, because I think there was kind of a 60s expansion when it became a London overflow town. But it is changing very rapidly. And so what role do you think in understanding and celebrating that history has in kind of keeping St. Neots as a special place? Because I think it's a special place.
Absolutely. I mean, I moved away for a couple of years, but I always knew that I would come back. And when actually history is kind of repeating itself, for me, it's really funny when, obviously we have concerns about the town growing too quickly and people saying, oh, you know, it's getting too big now and that kind of thing. But also when my mum was growing up here, you know, most of Amesbury was a building site, most of Eaton Socum was a building site because of that huge surge in the 60s and 70s from the London overspill. And whilst, we absolutely, there's potentially a limit and there's a pace at which you do these things, and taking it in a gradual way when you're expanding a town like this. But also it does make me laugh when people say, oh, you know, well, we've got too many people moving here. It's like, well, didn't you move here as part of the London overspill? Shouldn't I be offended? You know, shouldn't my family be offended?
So you can be offended at almost anybody, can't you, with your heritage here? So, but you're not. And I think that's the great thing about you, is you celebrate, you know, all that St. Neots is today, and also what it's going to become in the future as well. And I think, you know, as we get bigger, we have to keep this identity. My description of St. Neots would be a quirky little market town. And it might not be little anymore, but it's quite quirky. And if you compare us to Huntingdon, Huntingdon's got quite a serious history, isn't it? With Cromwell, they've had a prime minister. What's our town famous for, Grace?
Hilariously, we're the town with the only person to have assassinated a British prime minister. That is a real pet peeve of mine. Luckily, the St. Neots players are doing a performance about John Bellingham in the autumn months, so keep an eye out for that. But yeah, it annoys me how many people in the UK know about Abraham Lincoln and know about JFK and those assassinations. They don't know about Spencer Percival, the only British prime minister to be assassinated. And yeah, John Bellingham came from St. Neots. But there is nice things. The St. Neots quads were born here, the first quadruplets in the UK to live more than a few days. And they are now the oldest quadruplets in the world. They're all in their 80s. There's lots of lovely
James stories. James Toller as well, who's the...
Yeah, the Amesbury giant, you know, travelled around the world, got to meet Prussian princes, and, you know, got to, say, meet the monarchy in this country, and he's unfortunately died quite young, but is very fondly remembered and is buried in the church. And there's a street named after him, not the street he lived on, but there is a street named after him as well.
And also, I guess, St. Neots. So did St. Neot live in St. Neots then, Chris?
No, absolutely not. I have to say, I'm really sorry to spoil this for anyone listening. We didn't steal the bones of St. Neot. He wasn't stolen by angry Cornishmen. It's a great story. And the truth is also, what we know is that St. Neot lived and died in Cornwall, and that's why there is the town of St. Neot. He lived there as a hermit. And when the original priory was being built here by, I think it's Earl Leofric in the 900s, a great way to get some extra money and sort of infamy or attention for your priory was to have relics. People loved old bones and bits of saints back then. So we don't know the full story. We know there's a chance it could have been, the whole thing would have been officially sanctioned. We know the church warden for St. Neot, the person who guarded the bones in St. Neot, accompanied the bones for the 7 days it took to get to Huntingdonshire. he may have been bribed and the people of St. Neot may not have been thrilled about this arrangement, but I have to quash the myth. As a museum trustee, it is my responsibility to quash the myth about the bones being stolen and the angry Cornishman. And as much as I love that story.
And given that I'm not sure if this is a historical fact, but St. Neot was like 12 inches tall. So if we had stolen the bones, we could have fit them in a Kentucky Fried Chicken box, I reckon.
It would have been quite easy. Again, I'm hearing Liz Davies' voice in my head right now, getting quite angry about the 4-foot myth. I mean, there's an ingoing joke with my friends because I'm short and I like doing things around St. Neot. They call me St. Neot to be irritating. But you know, yeah, this St. Neot is sure. I don't know if the original one actually was.
Well, so one of the things we're talking about, a public art installation for the town, and like one of the proposals, which I think is a great idea, is to have an 8-foot statue, life-size statue of James Toller holding St. Neot in his outstretched palm, which I think would be wonderful.
It's an art installation, so I'm happy with it. That's kind of creative license. That's fine. And there's some great stories about St. Neot. So yeah.
So you've told us you understand all this history. What can we do more to keep that history alive, do you think?
Visit the museum. Always here to promote the museum. We have an excellent museum. I think there is a thriving sort of historical community here. I mean, the History Society has been going for 43 years, I think, now. And we do talks every month, so that's one way that you can engage with it. But yeah, I think there's just so many ways that you can celebrate it. Like, I like how at Pocket Park you've got the statue of James Toller, of... I forget who they are. There's someone with cricket bats.
Darth Vader's on there as well, I think.
No, I do know. I did know his... Cecil Paget, that's who it is. He lived in Eatonsoken and he developed like a really early type of waterproof, like cycling raincoat thing. Because yeah, that's another thing. Eatonsoken and Eaton Ford have a really fascinating history, being on the Great North Road, of speed cycling, of racing up and down the country. So that's another quite cool thing.
So, and I think we talk about that statue in Pocket Park. As far as I'm aware, that's the whole only statue in town, I think, because the whole of the town, because it's, a few years ago when all the kind of slave trader statues were getting dumped in rivers and towns having to worry about the history, we didn't have to do that because we don't have any of that. That's a bit of a pity, isn't it?
We have the day column, and that's kind of it, really.
Yeah, and the day column is an interesting historical quirk because it changes quite a lot and moves quite a lot. And every time you look at it, even, you know, photos back into the
60s. It was green at one point, I think, wasn't it?
It's strange. And I think it's not the original day column, but we can talk about that later. So we didn't have to get rid of any of our statues, but one angry gentleman wrote to me saying that there is a blue plaque very near to where we're recording here, commemorating where, was it John Bellingham,
on Bellingham lived. House on the White House, on the corner.
So Bellingham House was a serviced office space for a while. I think it's vacant at the moment. And he was basically suggesting that we should rename that because John Bellingham isn't a positive figure in our history. But actually, if you go back and you look at John Bellingham's story, it's really quite tragic, isn't it? And you know, he was a very unlucky guy. He was treated quite badly, ended up being imprisoned in Russia, I think. Yeah. And you can almost imagine how obviously shooting politicians is not something I'd ever recommend, but you can imagine, you know, it was born of desperation.
Absolutely. He became he had some sort of business ventures that didn't entirely sort of go to plan, and some of it said, oh well, he was just a bad businessman, but he may sort of particularly been, you know, sort of scapegoated by the Russian authorities. He was there with his wife, pregnant wife and young son, so she had to travel back by ship from, I think, Archangel back to, I think they were living in Liverpool by that point, which I think she had, would be a fascinating story to sort of talk about. And yeah, when he was eventually freed, he wrote to everybody. He wrote to the ambassador. He wrote to all these different MPs. He was down at the House of Commons. This is back when you could go into the House of Commons and personally lobby MPs. And he was there so often speaking to people, trying to get some kind of recompense and justice because he lost everything. And no one would help him. And so actually on the day that he was in the House of Commons lobby, no one really batted an eyelid because he'd been there so often trying to plead his case. I think there was a police constable who sort of said, Or there was some sort of, I don't know, person to do with the law who sort of said, look, there's not really anything that we can do. You've got to sort of do justice as you see fit. I don't think that's what he had in mind when he said that to John Bellingham. But yeah, he went to a tailor and had a pocket sewn secretly onto the inside of his coat to hide a pistol, and walked into the House of Commons lobby and shot Percival dead at point blank range. And he didn't run away. He walked and sat. He sat quietly in the corner by the fire, waiting to be arrested. And he was convinced he would be found innocent. He pleaded his own case. His defence sort of tried to get him to plead insanity, and he wouldn't. And it's great. You can read the whole transcript of the court case free online. You just search John Bellingham court case, you can find the whole thing. And he was utterly convinced that, yes, okay, I did it. And, you know, I think really he wanted to shoot the ambassador, but he said, well, the prime minister will do. He said, I did it, but, you know, I feel I was justified. And he was convinced, and they returned a guilty verdict in 15 minutes.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And what was his sentence?
So he was hanged several days later, and his body was donated to science, as it sort of often was back then. And his head is at St. Bart's, I think, Pathology Museum in London. His skull is still there. I think you need legitimate research interest to go, because I really, really want to go and look at his head. I don't think the fact that, but I live in St. Neots is a good enough reason. And the thing that, the part of the tale I always think, there's two parts to it. One, obviously loads of people went to see him hanged, and there were lots of people that did feel genuinely very sorry for him. And that I think there are a few people, particularly those that were affected by some of the reforms that Percival had brought in, you know, people that worked in agriculture were quite, you know, almost wish he'd shot more people. And also his wife, so she had, you know, two children and was now, you know, without, I don't know how much of a breadwinner he was, but in theory she was without a breadwinner. And a public subscription went round and money was raised for her. And they said she got more money from that than she would have ever done in any other circumstance. And you think about that now, I can't imagine, you know, our society today being so compassionate as saying, it's not your fault that your husband has done this. We want to make sure that you're taken care of as a family. Like, that blows my mind, the compassion people had back then of saying, it's not your fault and we're sorry.
So it's an incredible story, isn't it? And one that needs telling more. So there's no theatre plays. Is there any books about this that you know of? Or is it just...
There is. I think there's a short book. There's the odd, like BBC documentary clip. There's nothing in depth. If I see one more Gunpowder and Gunpowder plot adaptation, it infuriates me. He wasn't even successful. I'm not advocating for murdering, you know, monarchies or prime ministers.
Any politicians, especially not local councillors.
Absolutely not. But he wasn't even successful, and no one knows this story, and it's fascinating. I suppose the argument is that from the Gunpowder plot, we had Bonfire Night, and a few other sort of laws were sort of brought in place, like very harsh anti-Catholic laws. Technically, nothing really came about as a result of Spencer Percival being assassinated historically, so that might be why we don't hear about it as much. But I think it's a fascinating story, and the St. Neots players are working on a project that is upcoming where they're going to tell his story, and then I think Liz Davis is going to talk about it as well.
That's amazing.
It's sometime in the autumn.
I've just had a fantastic idea, because I'm loving listening to you tell these stories. You should just do a St. Neots history podcast. It would be a great way, wouldn't it, of encoding the history.
There'll be more things to do.
I know, because your husband is sat next door playing on his computer. Yeah, and as we walked around yesterday, we were just talking about all the things you do and your chaotic lifestyle. Because, you know, being a serial volunteer, I have a chaotic lifestyle as well. So I get that as well. And I somehow manage to get stuff done, because it feels like everything's floating by me in space, and I grab something and do it for a while and then move on. So one of your other big interests, you mentioned earlier, Pocket Park. So I really got to know you at Pocket Park Run when you started turning up as a volunteer. And I was really impressed by you because, you know, Park Run is largely for runners and walkers, but you hadn't run it or walked it at that stage. You were just a volunteer who came down to help the community. And I was really impressed by that because, you know, you were doing it out of the kindness of your heart, not because you were guilt-tripped into it by running every week. And then one day I was out running with my friends and I saw somebody shooting past in the opposite direction, and it was you. And it turned out that you turned into a secret runner. How did that happen?
Yeah, I did a bit of, I really got into volunteering when I was at university. I took a year out before I went to uni, and it's just sort of, shout out to Frost for giving me my first job, and it was really useful. And so by the time I went to uni, I was like, I'm going to say yes to everything, and I've not stopped since. So I started volunteering there and did a bit of marshalling. And then when I moved back to St Neots, I was like, oh, there's this thing called Parkrun and you can marshal there. That sounds quite good fun. It doesn't matter that I'm not a runner. And people would ask me, so when are you gonna run? I'm like, I don't. I'm a basset hound. I walk, I plod, I don't run. But then I thought how funny it would be if I just turned up one day and then put in a pretty decent 5k time. So I started doing Couch to 5k in secret, but I live in the middle of St Neots, and I think I'm quite distinctive being like 5 foot tall with bright red hair. And so when I go running past people, they're like, Grace. And yeah, I got rumbled.
But the thing is, you weren't running slowly. It was like a red blur as you shot past in the direction. And to see somebody who you thought, who was a proud non-runner, suddenly sprinting past in the opposite direction, it was quite disturbing for me. And we rumbled you, we stopped you, and we're like, what's going on? But actually, since then, you've turned into, I think, you won't admit this, but quite a decent runner as well. You've done how many half marathons now?
Four. I've not done them in pretty decent.
Do you know what your best time is?
I think it's like 2:23 or something. I would like to get under 2:20, but then I started saying yes to, when I started running was the only thing I did pretty much. And then I started saying yes to everything else. So the running's taken a bit of a hit. But I like being able to, it's really nice going out around town and just seeing different parts of it that you kind of miss when you're driving, or that you maybe don't get to when you're walking. Yeah, I don't run as quickly as I used to. I think I was probably sprinting and not understanding how Couch to 5K works at this point. I've slowed it down. It's a much more manageable pace. But no, I love it. And it was so nice to just be, like, the running community are so lovely. Pretty much anywhere you go, the running community are lovely. In St Neots, they are particularly lovely. And I've made, you know, lots of lovely friends from that, from the Pocket community. I joined the East Valley Runners. And then, yeah, I got that parkrun bug, and then Junior Parkrun came a calling.
So there's two parkruns in St Neots. There's the 5K parkrun, which is open to anybody, isn't it? Adults and young people, as long as they run with the parents.
Yes.
And then not long afterwards, so the Pocket Parkrun is obviously in Pocket Park. And then maybe a year afterwards, Jenny Moore started Riverside Junior Parkrun, which I think it was a bit contentious at the time, because it's not anything to do with Riverside Runners per se, although they're obviously very interested in it. Mm-hmm. It's named after the park. So Riverside Juniors takes place in Riverside Park. When does it take place?
Every Sunday at 9:00.
How much does it cost to take part in?
It is absolutely free. That's the beautiful thing about it.
And what if you don't want to run?
You don't have to.
So how far is the course on Junior Parkrun?
So it's 2 kilometres, it's aged from ages 4 to 14. So we have people that, sort of young people that do both adult parkrun and they do the kids one as well. And obviously, you know, the little 4-year-olds, they'll toddle along and they might not finish the whole thing. Sometimes it ends in tears, not very often. But yeah, they can really take it at their own pace. And the beautiful thing about any parkrun you go to is that there is always a tail walker whose job it is to be the last person. So yeah, it's really nice seeing the kids get more confident in their running. And it's the main thing is that it's fun. We ensure that it is good fun, that it's not super competitive. You can race against your own times and that's brilliant, but it's not about, you know, it's about having a good time. And if you just want to walk it one week, if you want to skip it, you know, you want to dance it, you can do whatever you want.
And the thing about the 2K Junior Parkrun is that it's set up so that every part of the course is visible from, you know, marshal to marshal, which means that young people, if they choose, can run it by themselves, can't they, or walk it by themselves. Or if you want to, you can have your mum, dad, uncle, auntie, granny run with you as well. And so you have adults running, but the adults don't get a time at Junior Parkrun.
No, absolutely. Which is a shame, because I've tail walked that route a lot and I would love some more running credits for that. But as it's only 2K, it doesn't technically count. But I've got plenty of volunteering credits. It's quite near my house. And the best thing, we're always looking for volunteers. Obviously, Pocket Parkrun, excellent to volunteer for. But Junior Parkrun, we're done by 9:30 most of the time.
It's also in Riverside Park.
We go to Ambience Cafe. It's excellent
as well.
Yes.
And so, like, you can almost justify your massive bacon sandwich.
I can always justify my sausage baguette after a Junior Parkrun. You get to feel smug for the rest of the day.
And your role at Riverside Juniors?
So I'm now, I started off just as like a regular marshal. Now I'm part of the core team. And yeah, it's great. It's another thing I've been sucked into, but wouldn't change for the world. We just had our 150th event on the windiest day of the year. I decided to bring big 150 balloons. And environmentally, I'm so sorry to say that they got ripped away and they floated off into the sunset. And I feel so bad as an environmentalist. I feel awful about that, but they look great.
This podcast is gonna get cancelled now because of this harsh environmental crime. My 50th birthday balloons, I tried to put them in the boot of the car when I was drunk. Same thing happened. So probably shouldn't have balloons like that, should we?
I've learned my lesson, I think. I mean, promoting, you know, local business, use your local party balloons. They are excellent. But really be careful if you're going to have them outside for an extended period of time on the windiest day of the year. I really should have known better.
So one of the reasons why you're not going to be able to do the St Neots History podcast is because, as you say, you keep getting sucked into things. And something quite big that you've been sucked into, and I think you must be rehearsing now, is you're a bit of an amateur thespian, aren't you, these days as well?
That was a new one. I decided, I turned 30 on January 1st, and so I thought, right, before I turn 30, I want to audition for something, and I auditioned for the Jack and the Beanstalk Panto by the Fantastic Players last year, and they were silly enough to let me do it. So I had a great time as Pansy, Princess Jill's best friend. She's integral to Jack and the Beanstalk. I don't know what you mean. I don't know what you mean. You've never heard of her. She's fantastic. Yeah. Best lines, best everything. And I was like, right, that was really good fun, but I'm maybe going to leave it there. And my husband sort of saw the glint in my eye and said, no, if something else comes along and you want to do it, please do it. I was like, well, that's great because the committee really would like me to audition for the girl on the train. I'm not the girl on the train, but I'm a girl in a play, and we're still selling tickets. I'm very excited.
She don't get to go on the train.
No, I'm really excited to see. I have really bad, my brain is really bad at visualising stuff when people describe it to me. So I keep hearing amazing things about what the set is going to look like and how we're going to sort of have the train and how it's all going to work. I can't picture any of it. So I'm as excited as anyone else to see what it's going to look like.
So what stage are you at with all this? Have you learnt your lines?
Pretty much, yeah. I pretty much know them all. I'm mainly just in arguments with other characters. If you haven't seen the book, there's a very good film with Emily Blunt, and then a book as well. So we're doing the version that is set in England, so no terrible American accents from us.
It's not too late. Just on the first night, just put one on.
No, I'm pretty much there. There's some like physical scenes that we need to do. It's not one for the kids. You do need to be
physical scenes. Are you trying to sell tickets at this stage? That's what it is.
I could not possibly say any more, but if you know the play in the book, you know the play in the book. But yeah, I know my lines. I'm excited. I'll be nervous about 30 seconds before it starts, and then it's too late and I've just got to get on with it. I don't think I'm sensible enough to have nerves about these things.
And when is this going to, when's the
30th and 31st of May and the 1st of June at the Priory Centre. It is the last show we are doing at the Priory Centre before the big refurb.
Wow, that's amazing. And who else is in?
So we have Abby Lathwell. So she's done amazing things over the last few years. So I remember seeing her in Jane Eyre like 10 years ago. She was in Dial M for Murder. She was in the award-winning Gaslight. We also have George Kelly, Ian, Worsfold. I always get his surname wrong. It's a cast of some real like, veterans of the players, but also some new actors as well, that you might not have seen before. Maybe you saw them in Vamps or, you know, other sort of shows. So yeah, it's a real mix, which is really nice, and we're all gelling really nicely, which is lovely.
So I haven't seen the film or read the book, I'm going to save this. I'm going to get some tickets now. Everybody, can you buy tickets for it yet?
From the you can. If you go onto the players' website, the tickets are still going. Yeah, Well, obviously, if we sell out, excellent.
No, get them early because I'm pretty sure it will sell out as well. It sounds like a really, I think there's, yeah, I was saying to you yesterday, quite often you end up going to the theatre and watching pantomimes and watching musicals, but actually going to see kind of a straight theatre play is actually a rare treat. And actually some of the most moving theatrical experiences of my life has not been, I mean, I love musicals, don't get me wrong, but actually going to see something that's quite intellectually challenging is always, always good as well. So I'm really, really excited for
this. It's a really great play. I'm really interested to see how sort of people respond to it, and it's certainly testing us as actors. I mean, obviously it's only my second one, so I've had to switch from panto mode and jumping in
just do it.
just go really like camp and ham. But no, the director, Bella, she's done she's another player's veteran. She'd say she directed the Gaslight, which literally won like NODA awards locally, and so yeah, she definitely pushes us as actors to get the best out of us, sometimes in a slightly blunt critical way, but that's, you know, she's an excellent director, and yeah, I'm really excited to see how it all goes. I'll be terrified on the day, but it will be fine.
And once the final curtain goes down on the Girl on the Train, is it called? Yeah, Girl on the Train.
Yes.
Then you'll be able to turn your attentions to the next thing this summer. What's the big thing that's happening this summer in St Neots?
The St Neots Festival is returning. And this year I'm doing some heritage stuff, and I'm also sort of managing the community zone. Last year I just sort of ran around and just did stuff. I was mainly like carrier pigeon for the whole festival. You just saw me running around in a bright yellow t-shirt. But this time I'm in charge of stuff. So that's quite daunting.
You've been promoted this year. I didn't go to the festival last year because I was doing Pathfinder March, and it was like on the same day and I was gutted. I know. But this year I am coming and I'm also volunteering as well. So hopefully I don't get under
what are you doing at the festival this year?
I don't know. I've just put my name down. Basically, I will be down in the junior dog's body rolling around and running around and doing whatever you tell me to, Grace, as well. So I'm being nice today in case to make sure that you won't be harsh. Where would you put St Neots Festival on kind of the hierarchy or like of all the things that's happened in town? It seems to me that's one of the biggest things that ever happened here.
It's huge. I mean, last year it was mad to see it all come together. And yeah, I think there were definitely some tears on that when Brian Moore brought the parade to the stage and everything was all set up. Like there were definitely some tears from all the different, like from the core team. And I've never seen social media, like Facebook in particular, so positive. Like there were obviously, you know, there were things we needed to work on and things, you know, we hopefully have improved for this year. But honestly, I've never seen so many people saying so many good things, and the weather definitely helped, but yeah, just we really wanted to bring something that was accessible and free. You know, you didn't feel that you're walking around being asked to pay for stuff every like 30 seconds, and to just really show off St Neots at its best. And I hope we've done that. The problem is we did such a good job last year, it now brings a different kind of pressure for year two.
Well, because I didn't go to the first one, I come to this one, I thought it wasn't as good as they said it was. It's a bit rubbish this year. It's all fallen apart. Actually, my friends, Ben Pitt, Claire Slade, Richard Slade, were the people who started all this. And because of COVID, it was many years in the making. It's a bit like a first album, isn't it? So people like Oasis do a great first album because they work for years on it. And then you do the second album and it's not quite as good. So I don't want to put any pressure on. But when they first started talking about a free festival, and all the way through, I talked to them all the time, I thought they were bonkers and they'd never pull it off. So I am quite confident this is going to be brilliant again. So to finish off with, we've been talking for half an hour and I think we've easily talked for 3 hours. What is the single thing, and I'm going to put you on the spot here, that you love most about St Neots?
That's hard. I mean, okay, aside from disclaimer, obviously, that it's all of my friends and family live in the same place. It's one of the things that ties me here is that my family are still here. They're all within walking distance, which I just absolutely love. It's not for everybody, but it's absolutely for me. It's wonderful. I don't know. Is it cheesy to just say that the history?
Yeah, I think, but I do think, and I think I'm really glad that you're keeping that alive, because I think for me, that's the most important thing going forward. And so the controversial Market Town kind of program that's going on at the moment with Market Square being dug up, I think is speaking to that, because I think it's restoring the market square to be the centre of the town. Because I think, you know, markets are not just about, they're not economic, just economic places. They're also social and cultural hubs, aren't they?
Yeah, we need more third spaces. That's something that, like, a lot of, not just in the UK, but, you know, across sort of different, like, Western countries, we're lacking those third spaces, those community spaces that are not home and they're not work. And sort of they've been replaced, you know, a lot of time with just, like, shopping. And love shopping. I have, you know, I love the different independent shops that we have in town and stuff. But yeah, you need those third spaces where it's just about community. I love that the festival sort of has brought a lot of that back to Priory Park. The number of people that spoke to me said, I didn't even know this was here. Like, this is huge park and I didn't even know about it. And the same with the Market Square. Fun fact about the Market Square, according to Tebbutt, at one point it was called Bellingham Square. Which I think is fascinating.
Well, I'm going to have a word at HDC. We'll get that changed tomorrow.
I don't know what message it sends, but that's hilarious to me.
I didn't know that at all. And I think, you know, one of the complaints about Market Square, it's just been empty and you just left it there all along. But like the Neatis in 2023, I think I counted, I did a little graphic, did about 35 different cultural events, all sorts of music, magic,
the
comedy, opera.
Gorgeous.
The Micro Festival, so I didn't go to the proper festival, but the Micro Festival was one of my best days ever in Sydney. It's sitting in the sunshine, listening to some great acts and people, and some of the shopkeepers were telling us that they had their best ever day. And that's the point, isn't it? Is that the square itself will be lovely when it's done, but it's only going to be useful if the community get together and bring events in. So the Neatis has done loads of those things, but it should be open for everybody to use as well. So I'm really looking forward to that. And that for me is a solution to the high street's woes, which, you know, I think we've got a good high street with lots of brilliant independent shops, but the kind of the seedlings or saplings we've got at the moment will just thrive if we can bring more and more people into the town centre. So really exciting times. And it's been lovely talking to you. So thank you very much
for having me.
The third guest after a long break on the People's Republic of St Neots podcast.
Thank you so much. Anytime.
You've been listening to the People's Republic of St Neots podcast. If you enjoyed listening to this episode of the podcast, then please like, follow, subscribe, or leave a 5-star review. The People's Republic of St Neots is written, edited, and produced by me, Stephen Ferguson. The artwork is from Richard Slade and the Neotists. The theme music is a song called Love of Mine from the Hunts. See you all next time in the People's Republic of St Neots.